This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our December 6th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And we're trying to close that gap. And that gap is between your present portfolio and your goals. So you're achieving your goals, right? So where does your portfolio lie today? And how do we not only get it on the path to reaching whatever those goals are, but also make sure it stays on that path on a regular basis, right? Because managing your financial situation, just like paying your bills, is something you have to do ongoing. You don't just pay your bills once, right? You have to go back and adjust and continue to pay them, or continue to focus on your investments and making sure they are aligned with what your needs are both today and in the future. And maybe that gap is about filling information in to your gaps of investment knowledge. Maybe you need to improve your fundamental investing skills, understanding different terminology that matters, right? Different concepts, investing concepts, because there's a lot out there that you really need to know about, and they may not all apply to you, but you can always take a little something from each one and apply it to your situation over time. May not apply today, but it could apply in the future as well. Maybe the gap is creating a plan in the first place. That's really where most people lack anyway. They don't really have a plan. And we're here to help. So whatever is on your mind, we want to hear from you. That's our plan today. That's our plan, which is to fill in your gaps of knowledge. And investors are looking for financial instruments that promise high returns, always, right? We all want high returns. And REITs, a lot of times, are at the top of that list because they're kind of easy to understand. At least most people think they're easy to understand. But when you're investing in a REIT, a real estate investment trust, in the open market, there are some things you need to know. So we're going to talk about, but before you invest in REITs, there are a few things you should know. We're going to touch on that. That's our main talking point today. I have some other ones as well. We're going to talk a little bit about the tax reform, right? Tax reform and what that's going to do to earnings. That's going to be a big one. And what the effects will be. So we're going to touch on that. I also, in relation to that, is what does that mean for technology stocks and manufacturers as well? Because those are kind of the main focus of this change. And then lastly, NAFTA renewal. Who will benefit if various things happen? So we're going to talk about all those things as well. But ultimately, it's really up to you. We want to know what is on your mind. So before we get into any of our business, let's turn to you. And you drive our conversation, as always, with your questions. And I try to answer them live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or you can leave your question, as always, on our 24-hour listening line at 888-99-CHART. So let's go to that call right now.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. This is Rob calling from Las Vegas. Question for you. Last week I was listening to a podcast, I believe it was an encore presentation of one of your previous podcasts, and you had mentioned or were discussing about when a fiduciary is acting like a fiduciary. I guess my question is, my financial advisor, they are a registered investment advisor firm as well as a broker-dealer. I guess listening to you, as an RIA, they are acting as a fiduciary when they're doing financial planning. However, they put their broker-dealer hat and act as more of a suitability standard, if that's what I gathered from your podcast the other day. Wanted to see if you could just clarify that for me, when they're acting as an investment manager versus a registered investment advisor, when they're providing investment advisory services. Any clarification would be fantastic. I'll listen on the next podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's a great question, and this is in light of the Department of Labor ruling, which is trying to put every investment professional under the purview of the fiduciary standard, which means that we have to act in the best interest of our clients. And a lot of brokers are currently under what is called the suitability standard, which is simply, say for example, a large cap growth mutual fund is right for you. They can sell that to you and collect a commission no matter how bad that large cap growth fund is. Even if it's the worst growth large cap growth fund in the world, as long as that asset class is kind of suitable for you, then they can collect as much commissions as they want. The fees can be as high as they want because it's under the suitability standard. So everything's trying to move under that fiduciary standard. And all RIAs like us are fiduciaries. But there are some RIAs, which you're describing, is that they also are a broker-dealer and they're allowed to kind of switch hats depending on what they're doing. The one thing, and that's what makes it confusing for a lot of consumers. And the way I would go about it is I would ask them whenever they're doing anything, whether changing investments or whatever, is which hat are you wearing currently? And then I would also ask, are you collecting a commission on any of this, right? If I do X, Y, and Z based on what your recommendations are, what commissions are you collecting? Because as an RIA like us, we cannot collect commissions. And that's usually where the conflict of interest really lies and where it comes to light is when these investment professionals are collecting commissions because they're incentivized to put their clients in particular investments. And as an RIA, when you're fee-based, it's an asset, it's under management fee, basically, and all we're aligned for is to try to make you more money because we make more money because the assets under management tend go up if we make our clients money. And that's usually the case for all other RIAs unless they also are a broker-dealer and then they can wear both hats and that's where it gets confusing. So mainly what I would ask, if anything, is when they're making a recommendation, I would say, which one of these changes would you collect a commission on as a broker-dealer? Okay, and then that is when they would be acting under the suitability standard as opposed to the fiduciary standard. Hope that clarifies everything. Now, one of the situations we encounter with clients and prospective clients is that folks who have changed jobs but still have their 401k nest egg at their old employer. We see this all the time. You heard us talk about rolling over your 401k, and that means rolling it into an IRA typically or another 401k account as a new employer, but you always want to roll that into an IRA. So rollover is the term for transferring your tax-protected retirement savings from one account into another. Typically, that's moving from a 401k, a 457, 403b type account into an IRA. There are other ones as well, but I don't want to get into those. But it's typically keeping that tax-deferred status is really what that's all about. Now, before you start, understand it is critical to directly transfer the money from the current investment account that it's in to the new one. It's called a direct rollover. This is easily accomplished by first setting up the new account at a new broker, right? We use TD Ameritrade. And then going back to the current account and requesting the money to be transferred directly. That's why you call it a direct rollover. Now, it may seem logical to clear out the current account by requesting the check made out to you, then mailing or walking that check to the new institution to deposit into the 401k. You can do it, but what will happen may not be that pleasant. Now, you want to have the funds directly transfer from the old account to the new without ever touching the money, and make sure your name is not on the check because there will be tax consequences and you have to prove that you've moved that money over. Okay? So you always want to try to do a direct rollover into a new account. And with that new IRA, or Roth IRA. It can be done in a Roth IRA, but there would be tax consequences there, but that's something you want to work out with your accountant. You have a much larger universe of investment choices than you will with your current 401k or even a new 401k, most likely. So we help folks all the time at KPP with this, and you need to get it right. So if you have any questions about the process, don't hesitate to reach out to us and give us a call. Now, 888-99-CHART is the number of how to get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, but it does go by quickly, so we really hope you call in sooner rather than later. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, and true diversification reduces portfolio volatility. False diversification is when investors distribute their eggs among a number of different baskets but don't realize that the baskets are very similar. That happens a lot when you have different funds, but they all kind of invest in the same type of assets. Now, do you have questions about diversification or anything else financial? I want to hear from you. Check in now at 888-99-CHART. (888) 99 chart, 888-992-4278. Now let's look at our list of topics for today. And we're going to talk about investing in REITs. That's our main talking points. Talk a little bit about the tax overhaul that I'm going to get to and what that means for investors. But let's take a quick look at the market today. We had a modest update overall. I'm trying to load this up. It was a modest update. We had the ADP jobs report come out, which showed about 190,000 jobs created by the ADP. That's their mark. We'll get the actual real number starting on Friday, and so it was kind of a modest day. Actually, the market was down a little. I didn't see that. But down 40 for the day on the Dow. S&P was about flat. NASDAQ was up 14. It was up most of the day, and we faded most of the day as well. So still pretty choppy. You're kind of still getting the buy the rumor, sell the news type of event. There's a little more clarity on the tax bill that is kind of tempering some of the expectations for increased earnings for next year. Because of certain offsets like state taxes, right, where the state and local tax rates will kind of temper some of that repatriation of cash, right? That certainly could be an issue, and we'll get to those in detail a little bit later. But overall, we still are kind of working off some overbought conditions in the market, certainly overvaluation, which we've been that way for a little while now. But overall, this is a standard kind of buy the rumor, sell the news type of event on tax reform. And I think the market will settle into something that's a little bit more realistic as more details are hashed out and the details between the Senate and the House bills are reconciled, because there are some differences that do matter. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, and I welcome your money question. Now, most people spend about 2/3 of their income on food, housing, and transportation. So it's not what you do with the rest that determines your financial future. What it is, actually. So let's talk about your plan. We can talk live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time, each and every weekday as always, but you can use that same number for off-hour calls as well. It's 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Chris in Indianapolis. Love the podcast. My question for you is about the company Red Hat, symbol RHT. I bought shares in this company back in 2001 after the tech bubble at a really low price. It's had a great year in 2017, and its ratios are now pretty expensive to want to buy more. So I'm wondering if you think I ought to sell some of my holdings now, or if maybe you see additional opportunities for growth moving forward and I should hang on a little while longer. Thanks. I look forward to your response.
All right. He's looking at Red Hat. This is one of the largest tech companies. This is one of the larger tech companies, let's say, in the marketplace. Not the largest, but it's fairly large, about a $21 billion market cap. pretty much no debt with an enterprise value of $20.5 billion. So they have about $1 billion net cash on their balance sheet. That's pretty good. Revenue growth at 20% year over year. Earnings growth 65% year over year. Enterprise value to EBITDA is 41. That's very high. So it certainly is pretty expensive. That would worry me a little bit. Let's look at the profitability. Return on equity 23%. Return on invested capital 15%. Both very, very solid numbers, especially with very limited debt on its balance sheet. So I like that. Operating earnings yield about 2%. You're right. It is pretty expensive. Let's try to look at a chart real quick to see what type of strength it has overall, because ultimately, you know, in a market where it's kind of trending higher, there's nothing wrong with maybe taking a little bit off. And it's starting to come in a little bit with the overall tech sector. Hit a high of about 130 or so. About 130. Now it's down to about 121 at the close today. So a modest pullback overall in the overall stock. Broke its 50-day moving average. That would worry me a little bit. And you've had it for a while, so I would certainly take some off with the valuation you have here. Cut back your position. Still a great company, but I think you'll find better valuations in the next couple years to add to the position or add back to the position. So I would definitely take a pass on Red Hat for right now. And for everyone else, if you don't know what Red Hat is, they're a software company operating businesses across the world. It's primarily engaged in providing services to its versions of open source Linux software. So that's really what it's all about, is their Linux software. They do work in the storage space as well, and they're one of the most popular platforms when it comes to business software, back-end business software in the world. So certainly a great business, but you're also paying up for that business with a PE of about 72, and revenue growth is still very good, 16% three-year average, but it's still on the expensive side, and so that's why I would reduce my position. Let's go to Victor in New Jersey. How you doing, Victor?
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can I do for
my my question is, how do I figure out what tax bracket I'm in? And if there's any way to protect, not that I make a lot of money, but is there any way to protect myself with the potential changes in the tax structure over in Washington?
Okay. What tax bracket you're in, that's going to be a question for your accountant, right? You need to dig into both your income and potential write-offs. Do you typically itemize your expenses on your taxes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you say you itemize a lot? Like you do a lot of mortgage interest deduction and other things to reduce your tax rate?
Yeah, I do. I do the interest on my mortgage, property taxes, and now I just found out I'm eligible for a military discount. But that's state. Mm. That's state level, not federal level.
Yep.
So I was just wondering, is there a math I could do to say, okay, I'm in this tax bracket?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously you're going to look at what your total federal income tax payment will be, but that's going to be something you need to talk with your accountant figure out what that number is in relation to your reported income, your adjusted gross income. So that's certainly an easy calculation, but that's something you would probably want to sit down with your accountant to figure out.
Okay. Now, is there anything I could do? I'm sorry.
No worries. Anything you can do for
what? Is there anything I could do to leverage myself, like you said, protect more money? With potential changes,
protect your current assets for changes to the tax code.
Yeah, in other words, I'm making $67,000 a year. I install fire alarms. My wife's a nurse.
Okay.
Is there anything like maybe have my employer take more money out for my yearly taxes or?
I mean, that's certainly something you can do to make sure you're not paying not enough. But once again, that's a very specific thing. I would really have to sit down, and honestly, it would be accountant would sit down and look at the specifics. So I can't really give you anything right now. I would definitely talk with your accountant about that.
Our podcast continues on next. It may be hard to believe, but the average 401k investor misses out on over $5,000 per year in investment gains. How come? Poor timing and subpar fund choices. That's the big challenge that is being met now with Active 401k. The typical 401k plan has limited choices. People don't know what to do, and that's exactly why Active 401k was devised. It may be just what you've needed. It ranks your current options within your current employer's plan, and then all you do is log in and make the changes. You'll be told exactly what to buy, what percentages, and what funds. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and limited number of our listeners, too. And if you'd like to see more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. Now let's get back to our podcast. And now we continue with Invest Talk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective. Include us in on your decision-making process. Talk directly with a registered investment advisor. Bring your questions to Justin right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 25 minutes left, so it's going to go by quick, so get your call in sooner rather than later. Now, before investing in REITs, and REITs are a pretty popular type of security, a little bit different than your typical stock out there, but there's many of them that are listed on major exchanges, and these are real estate investment trusts that invest in either mortgages or properties, and they pay out a dividend, and they pay out 90% of their income as a dividend or more sometimes, and that's usually what makes them attractive from an investment perspective, because they're also tax exempt from federal income taxes at the corporate level if they pay out over 90% of their income to shareholders. Now, the difference is, one thing you have to consider is that because they are a pass-through entity, you will be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate on REIT income. Not taxed like you are with a qualified dividend from a Procter & Gamble or a Johnson & Johnson, right? So it's a little bit different. Now, in an IRA or a 401k, a tax-deferred account, you aren't paying that tax. So it's actually a lot nicer to hold these REITs within a tax-deferred account. So consider that. Now, also, you have to also consider that high interest rates can be a problem for REITs. Couple reasons. First off is, as interest rates rise on very, very safe securities, the interest rate or the dividend that you're receiving from REITs becomes a little bit less attractive. So it has a bond proxy type of feel to the price movement on REITs. Okay? So consider that. And then also, if they are borrowing money, which most of them are, to buy properties and sustain their ownership within a property, they may have a variable cost to the debt that they have on their balance sheet. And so higher interest rates could create a problem for them, higher costs, which means lower income, net income for them, which means less dividend for you as well. This is even more important for mortgage REITs. And I see that a lot as people are chasing the yield on mortgage REITs. And, you know, as long as interest rates stay relatively low, they can be a good thing. But higher interest rates can be an issue for mortgage REITs. Okay. And then it's about what type of assets are they holding. It's not just that they're invested in real estate, but usually they're tied to a particular sector of the real estate market. That could be retail, right, where you're owning malls, for example. Simon Property Group is a good example of that, where they own a lot of malls, and they're going to be tied to spending on from consumers and the economy in general, very sensitive to that. And certainly you have secular headwinds that's affecting the retail space. Then you have residential REITs, where they're investing in sometimes homes. Other times it could be apartments, and they're renting those out. There's also healthcare REITs, where they own properties in relation to the healthcare industry as a whole, and that could be a bioscience facility where they're doing R&D, but it also could be just your nursing facility for seniors, right? And that's something as well. Then you have the mortgage market, like I said, mortgage REITs, where they're investing in individual mortgage securities, and they're kind of acting like a bank, but only for the mortgage market. And then there's obviously office REITs, where they own large office buildings across various sectors, and they're going to be certainly cyclical as well. And then industrial REITs, where they're investing in industrial facilities and renting those out as well. So keep in mind the values of those investments can rise and fall depending on market conditions. Okay, so be aware of that. Now, once again, you're going to get that 90% of the income paid out to you in a taxable income. And so you're avoiding that double taxation, which is nice, avoiding paying corporate tax. And one thing you have to realize is that REITs are analyzed a little bit different. You want to look at funds from operations, which basically is backing out depreciation. So if you look at their net income, it might look like they're not making enough money, or they're paying out too much in their dividend, then they can't afford it. Well, first off, they need to pay that out for the rules of REITs. And then also, you have to look at depreciation. They're usually depreciating these assets, right? You're depreciating some sort of real estate, and that's really looks like they're making less money, but in reality, their cash flow is still very strong, right? Depreciation is a non-cash type of expense, and so you have to consider that as well. But you also have to look at cap rates, the intrinsic value of the properties, debt coverage as well. So there's a lot of factors to consider, but they're definitely analyzed differently than most other stocks that you might invest in the marketplace. Now, tops on our list are your priorities and your calls. So bring your questions to us anytime at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. Longtime listener here. Love the show and everything you do. Thank you. A quick question. I've been watching this stock here for last year, and it's done pretty well. U.S. Steel. What do you think of it? Do you think it's something that'll grow in the future? Just interested in hearing your thoughts. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, he's looking at U.S. Steel. They manufacture flat rolled and tubular steel products for automotive, containers, construction, and appliance markets. About a $5.5 billion market cap company. Revenues are picking up. You know, last year they had revenues falling 28% in the second quarter of the year, which has been a big turnaround now. Last quarter, in the third quarter, they grew their revenue by 21%. They lost money last year in 2016. They lost $1.58. This year, they're going to make $1.76 and $2.40 next year. Yields about 0.6%, so not a big dividend. 131% debt-to-equity ratio, that's a little large for my taste. Certainly going to be very cyclical. And they've gone up a lot, partly because of Trump. Right, Trump's whole mantra is about build America first, and he's initiated some anti-dumping policies in relation to China, in relation to the aluminum industry, and there's a lot of expectation that he'll do some things that will help the steel industry as well. So I would think that that's part of the reason for the rally. But if you look at the valuation, it's kind of expensive at these levels. You have a PE at 21, which is very, very high in relation to in the commodity space. 21 is a very high PE ratio. Usually commodities trade at low PE ratios. Why? Because they tend to have low margins. They're very cyclical. Their economic prospects are up and down. And you can just look at that with U.S. Steel. Since 2010, half the years they've lost money, half the years they've made money, so there's no consistency to their business, and that's what I don't like about it. Operating earnings yield about 7.26%, which is okay, but not in a business that's so up and down. And I just don't like that. I don't like that factor. So their dividend certainly can be raised. It has some room to grow. Because their payout ratio is only 28%, cash dividend payout ratio only about 10%, and so overall they're healthy today. But I like companies that have consistency to their operations, consistency to their business, and I'm just not seeing that with U.S. Steel. And after this rally from a low of, back in March of last year, it was trading at around $6 or $7 a share. Now we're at $31 a share. So I think you've missed the boat, and I just don't like the up and down nature of their business. Now, certainly there's going to be some positive aspects to what Trump's policies will be, but a lot of that I think is already built into the price of the stock. Thanks for the call. Now, you may be hearing a lot about the proposed fiduciary laws, and they've been kind of postponed for a little while, but registered investment advisors continue to be bound by fiduciary laws from the SEC and state commissions. Now, our responsibilities are both ethical and legal as well. So a fiduciary is required to act in the best interest of their client. We've always been fiduciaries as RIAs, and anybody who is an IRA is bound to that as long as that's the hat that they're wearing. And I always say you will probably want to deal with somebody who only wears that hat. Now, a fiduciary is held to a high standard of honest and full disclosure in regards to their clients and must not obtain personal benefit at the expense of their clients, right? Always putting the client first. So that's why they're really trying to put this rule into effect, because it matters. It can be a big factor. So that's the law that we live by at KPP Financial. And if you have a question about the role of a fiduciary or an RIA, registered investment advisor, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Why don't you invest a few minutes and check out our book section on investtalk.com? Besides Steve's book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor, you'll see a whole catalog of titles that Steve and Justin have personally selected to help you improve not only your investing knowledge and know-how, there are books that will expand your perspective too. Visit the recommended book section on investtalk.com. There may be a gift idea there.
Let's go to Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Listen, my stock is KKR, and I've got two opposing opinions on it. I was looking in Barron's last week, and some private equity group, I guess it's a private equity group, bought 2.2 million shares to raise their total stake to about 47 million shares, or 10% of the total value. But, however, the analysts only label this stock as a hold with a price target of 21. So my question is, who's right here, the analysts or the group that's buying a pretty large stake in this company?
Well, I would never take a price target from an analyst, okay? Analysts are pretty good at understanding the business, and they have calls with management, and they have insight into how the business in general is doing. But when it comes to what the stock is worth, you know, it's just an educated guess, just like most investors, right? So I wouldn't take an analyst price target much more than, you know, with a grain of salt, right? So this large investor, which is a private equity group, which is kind of what KKR is anyway, is taking a large stake. I'm sure they've dug into the business a little bit more and probably are more in tune with what's going on. Now, I'm looking at the financials, and I think KKR is having some trouble here. You have negative operating cash flow of about $3 billion, which is a lot of money over the trailing 12 months, and it's only increasing its cash burn. Now, part of it is they are paying down a lot of debt, so that's a positive, because their financial leverage has gone from 12.8 now down to 6.4, so they've cut their debt in half overall in relation to their equity, which is a positive. But their revenue is also declining. Revenue was $7.2 billion in 2015. Now at trailing 12 months, it's at $4.7 billion. So I want to know what's going on here, what their strategy is. Did you read why the private equity firm got in? What was their rationale?
No, it didn't. It was just a short article, so it really didn't go into detail. But, you know, gotcha. I'm an owner of the stock, and I'm thinking, well, maybe now's the time to get out of it. You know, the P.E. is
well, I do think that it's why are you in it, I think, is the main question. Are you looking for the income? Are you looking for price appreciation? Are you a long-term holder? But it doesn't sound like it, since you're looking to possibly sell.
Well, no, I've been a long-term holder, but the stock really hasn't gone anywhere over the last several years. So I would think, well, with this analyst's recommendation is, hey, it's only got an upside of a couple of bucks. You know, maybe it's time to get out of it.
Yeah, and you obviously did you hold through the big drop? You know, it was in the mid 20s, and then it fell all the way into the low teens, and you've held it through
that.
I'm assuming, and now
through.
You're back up to around 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly, from a technical perspective, that big move down, part of it was driven by the cut in dividend, right? They cut their dividend rate from about $2.03 a share in 2014. Trailing 12 months, they've only paid out 66 cents. So their dividend's been cut by about three quarters since that time. And obviously, you felt that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think it's high risk. You're late in the cycle for the economy, and these are the type of businesses that tend to be more cyclical, right? They're leveraged. They're certainly going to be taking more risk than your average type of company, and they're going to be, once again, very cyclical, and their business is up and down as well. You know, in 2011, they only made a penny, made 220 in 2012. Went down to 59 cents last year in 2016, and now it's going to be back up to $2.41. So it's kind of up and down. You're kind of in the same place that you were earnings-wise just a few years ago when things are good. So and their dividend's been cut, and revenue's only up 1% year over year. So I think this recent rally from, you know, off the $12, $11 level into the $20 level is a good opportunity to at least lighten your stake up. But honestly, I would sell it all, considering we're late in the cycle. They, even though they paid down debt, they're still heavy on the debt side, and it's a very cyclical type of business. Thanks for the call, Will. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. The clock is ticking. We only have about 8 minutes left, so we're winding down to the last few minutes of the show. So better get it in before we are done for the day. You can reach me now with your question at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Daniel in Orlando. How you doing, Daniel? You there, Daniel?
Hey, Justin, this is Vinny from San Jose.
Oh, it's Vinny. How you doing, Vinny?
Yeah. Hey, pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. What can I help you with?
Hey, question on precious metal and the miners with respect to the upcoming tax, interest increase, and also the tax changes with the strong dollar. You know, what's your view on precious metal and the miners?
Yeah, I mean, I still think we entered a bull market early last year. You saw metals and take off through the beginning of the year, middle part of the year, and it's really been faded ever since. But we haven't broken any major support levels So I still consider this kind of a consolidation phase for the next move after, you know, we had a bear market from 2011 into the end of 2015. Certainly oversold at these levels, but I still think we're in a longer-term bull market. But, you know, in longer-term bull markets, you go through consolidation phases, and it's healthy. It usually shakes out the weak hands.
Yep. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Daniel in Orlando this time. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Daniel. Hey, Justin. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I'm calling out Alaska Airlines. I saw it dropped from that 90 to 100 level. It's been going down. You know, I think it's down 30 to 40% from its highs. Just can't really read it fundamentally, and was wondering what you thought about it.
Well, it's an airline, and frankly, I'm biased against airlines. My grandfather always hated them, and the reason is simply they go through these kind of boom and bust cycles where there's consolidation, and that consolidation allows for rates to rise and margins to increase. But in the end, it's a commodity service where people just want to get from point A to point B, and therefore, over the long term, their profitability tends to be limited. And so we've gone through kind of a boom cycle in the airline industry from about 2011 or so, where this company, Alaska Airlines, made $1.96 that year. Well, last year they made $7.32. This year their earnings are down, going to be down 8% to $6.77. Next year down another 6% to $6.39. So that's why you're seeing the stock drop from about $100 a share, it's 52-week high, 101, to $67 a share today. And it's a capital-intensive business, right? They need a lot of planes, certainly carry a decent amount of debt, but their revenue is increasing, but profitability is not. So what that's telling me is that competition is heating up within the airline industry, and that's going to push margins down across the board. And usually when that starts to happen, that doesn't end soon. And it's also cyclical, and we're late in the economic cycle. So that's why I'm not a big fan of Alaska Airlines.
Interesting. So even as a value play for a longer term, say 5 to 10 years, even just average, you know, dollar cost averaging into it, you wouldn't even recommend that or any airline
for that? I mean, like I said, I'm biased against airlines overall, so that makes it tough for me to get excited about Alaska Airlines. Ultimately, I would look at the kind of the long-term profitability. I know Alaska is definitely one of the better ones within the industry from a profitability standpoint, but if you look at like long-term return on invested capital, which is a great measure of profitability, it tends to hover kind of around the 2 to 4% level, but it's all over the board. Mm-hmm. Back in 93-ish, it was negative about 10%. Recently it was as high as 29%. Now it's at 13%. So it's kind of all over the board, going to be very, very cyclical. If you I'm going to overlay some recessions, and in the recessions you see that a return on invested capital drop, and you're starting to see that now. And so over the long term, return on invested capital tends to be low, even though it's 13 is relatively high right now, but it's kind of an anomaly. And so that's why I'm not a big fan of Alaska Airlines or airlines in general, and Alaska's probably one of the better ones out there. Thanks for the call, Daniel. Goal in Fremont, give us a call tomorrow. Hopefully we can answer your question. Got in too late. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, take advantage of our free service. Get an individual retirement review, no matter where you live, via Skype, telephone, or maybe FaceTime. It takes about an hour, and we review your current portfolio and make some suggestions on how to improve your situation for your particular goals. Now, to get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and I thank you for being with us for this hour. And on behalf of the whole KPP family, thank you for being part of the program. Let's meet again here tomorrow for Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.